Signs of the Southland, Monday, April 29th, 2024. Gentlemen, we're back, or I'm back, rather. Let's kick things off talking with something a little light. Let's talk about Inman Park Fest. Both of you were there spending a lovely weather weekend out in the sunshine, out in the parade. How is this for you, Jack?
I enjoyed it. I had somehow not done this fest before, and on Saturday I was like, I should solve this problem, and so took a nice walk down the Beltline to get there. Parade was fun, quite long too. I didn't realize how long it was going to be, but
Oh
they
yeah.
everything is in this parade. It was my first time seeing the gnomes. I know the gnomes are a big tradition around, and a bunch of other stuff. So it was really fun. The kind of place you just run into a bunch of people. And sure enough, ran into like 10 different people that I knew that were able to watch the parade with and all sorts of fun stuff. So it was ideal. It's of the best things Atlanta's got going on all the time. And it's just a great way just to see those houses in there, which I know is a big reason why that festival even started in the first place.
And I will say it's interesting because Jack, you did the tour, right?
No, I just walked
Okay,
around.
for context, this is my second year in a row doing it, and they switch up the houses. And this year they had a couple like non-house options, including some like former industrial renovated around the Olympics to be like residential, and they were all in the same complex, like this former machine shop. But three very different takes, and I thought that was nice and refreshing. Like, obviously, beautiful houses, and the market's fun, and the parade's cool, and all that. But it was worth going for a second year in a row, I think, is my take. So if you've been there, it's certainly lively every year. They got, of course, food and drink and music and stuff like that. But they keep the houses fresh, and it's cool. A lot of people walk there, bike there, take the train. Like it just felt very organic, and I think that was just neat to see a lot of people out and about enjoying the day. I was hanging out with a former host of this here podcast that m or a Saturday morning, and we drove past the Inman Park Fest, not knowing it was at the weekend. And then we got stuck in traffic in Midtown, and he quipped that a bunch of the people stuck in traffic with us must be trying to find parking to get to Inman Park Fest,
I did, in fact,
because
park
it.
in. I did, in fact, park basically in Midtown and then walked because that was just an easy way to do it, and I didn't
It was
mind the
rough.
walk.
Because we drove right past the MARTA station, the entire MARTA station parking lot was full, and then all of the roads were closed. Like the roads that would lead to the interior were all closed, so you couldn't park in the interior. And there's no road parking on That DeKalb Ave.
is
So,
the
point. point. That is the point. The point I'm is to not.
walk and bike and be and in the street and having fun. And yeah, Inside the festival,
that's
inside
the
of it.
entire point. Since when does Atlanta do things that are like good and urbanist? I ask you this
Hey,
question knowing the answer.
there's a ton of people on the train. It was great. It was great. I have no regrets. I didn't drive. I feel like I made the right call there.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Let's get the podcast started in earnest for this week. Let's talk about more and more construction happening at the Edge slash Fanning Center. I don't know. This is like a ship of Theseus moment. When does it stop being the Edge? When does it become the Fanning Center? It's a very
Yeah, there's
weird
been
section of time.
we're not at the fanning part yet. We're still removing the boards from the ship. We're de-edging the building right
I
now. That's a
wouldn't
terrible
use
way to say
Edge.
that. That was the worst thing I've
Keep
said on this podcast in a long time.
it
But
rolling, keep it rolling. You
no,
can't spin out of that one now.
not really. No, I'll own it. No, it's they're just knocking. They've had the machine out there just slowly but surely knocking down the cement. There's just wires flying out. You can see all the metal beams and stuff like that. It's cool. It's cool. Look, all the bleachers that are going to be taken out are taken out now, and I can tell they've like taken out like whatever. You can see some holes in the bleachers now where they're going to remove some of it. I think just where they had screws and stuff. I don't know, but it's slowly but surely getting there. Sidewalk. It's very hard to drive there. One of the
It
sidewalks is
is
almost done.
ridiculously stupid to drive there. I
Yeah.
tried last week and it's
Right. Yeah.
awful.
Yeah. It's not great, but not
Are
supposed to
you
be.
guys
Anyway,
trying to
another
turn
point
me
in
into the
favor.
Joker today? Like,
I
it's
was
just
about to
on the
say,
way.
it's
It's
another
on the
point in
way to
Jake's
things.
favor.
It's on the way to things for me. I'm going to explode. No, I was going to say one thing about the oh shoot. Is that still moving on, Jack? They phased the second part of the construction of First Street, right? Or First Drive, right? Or are they still working on that same chunk?
The cycle track, you mean? They have not started. It's still just roped off. They haven't
It's still
actually.
just the tearing it up thing.
Yeah, the
Okay.
cycle track though, that's or part of it's gonna be on Techwood, it looks like. That part has been paved at this point. They haven't opened it yet, but it has been paved. They still gotta paint it.
Gotcha. Cool. I was gonna say, I feel like I was like tying things together from my brain from being on campus for basically all weekend, 2 weekends. So I'm like, did we talk about some of this stuff? I can't remember, but I'm sure we have. So
Let's talk about baseball, who exploded for a lot of runs and turned Miami into the Joker. See, saved that one. A 13-2 win versus KSU to start the week, and then a 2-1 series win over Miami. 6-4 loss, followed by two wins back to back, a 9-4 win, and then a 17-1 7-inning victory. That is Tech's fourth straight ACC series win. They placed 25th in the College Baseball Nation poll slash ranking slash I don't really understand the methodology, but I put it here just to mention it. I think the last tournament projection that we looked at was having Tech as a three seed in a region hosted by Coastal Carolina and facing off against two seed Athens. So, Tech is starting to battle, the baseball is starting to battle right back into the tournament picture after I think at one point I said they were dead in the water. So, bully for me, I guess. Gentlemen, and let's start with Jake, actually. Any notes from this series for you?
Yeah, I already told you guys the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it again because I'm dramatic that way. I want you guys to just fill our listeners in. Where is Georgia Tech on our From the Rumble Seat numbers as it relates to the bubble?
Our very exclusive numbers have
Very
us
exclusive,
very
yes.
exclusive
Very
that
exclusive.
one day we'll make it
Subscribers
non-exclusive.
only, of course.
One day we'll
I'm
be
working on it, I promise. I'm just
one
bad at coding.
one day one day
Oh,
I
man.
believe you have a 64th, Mr. Grant.
I have us as the last at-large team in the field, yes. Which very emblematic. I feel like they're really on that razor's edge. And I need one of you guys to vamp because I'm in the middle of doing some back of the envelope math about run differential, which is not going to be very scientific, but I feel emblematic of the last 2 weeks, or really even the last month, because this team has been, I mean, they've scored a lot, like a lot of runs.
Sure. No, I...
And in a way that, like, I don't know, they're really close to being, what, big number and zero or one if they just move around the runs, but that's not how the sport works, right? Like
No, it's not. Yeah.
the
No.
bats are on. And we saw that for sure on Sunday, that they came back from a tough loss where they had a lead late against Miami, and that's really a series you gotta pick up with the tough sledding that we've got coming up here. But yeah, I mean, they came back and had a just absolute barrage of runs, and Sunday was, I mean, it was closer for a little bit, but they took care of business and sent Miami home early, in fact.
I love how you vamped when you asked us to
I'll
vamp.
Yeah, I was gonna say we can vamp for a little bit too, but Jack, I imagine you're gonna mention the more, I guess not really the debut, but like the growing legends of Cam Jones and Tate McKee as the season has developed. Cam Jones especially as the season has gone on, he's done it both ways, right? He's at the plate and on the mound.
I
Drew
think
Burris
yeah
has
we
still been hot too. So it's been, they're getting it. They're doing it on all fronts here.
yeah no we I think there wasn't like the clear and Aiden Finitarri as well on the mound, and there just wasn't like we knew we had some guys who were gonna pitch well, we thought we were gonna pitch well, and then it just didn't pan out to start the year. Like Terry Busey just hasn't been a factor this year, sadly, as much as we would have hoped to see Scary Terry again. Maybe thought Michael Cavallo could have been, Michael Cavallo's turned into something. Ben King has been, he's done, he's picked up the workload where he needs to be. He's not an ace by any stretch of the imagination, but he gets innings in when he needed to get innings in. Cam Hill, I think we all wanted, or we're thinking after his big what was it, Cape Cod season he had, where it's like, oh shoot, this guy's on it. But it turns out it's been Cam Jones, it's been Ada Vinatieri and Tate McKee that are doing the work and getting us and keeping us competitive and allowing the bats to at least give themselves a shot to only have to put up like, you know, 6 or 7 and win a game instead of 13 or 14 or whatever. Yeah, Cam Jones has 2 complete games. Granted, one of them was a 7-inning complete game, but he got a 9-inning complete game. It was the first one we've had since 2021 that Andy Archer threw in a tournament game, I believe. And then, yeah, Drew Burris at 18 homers. He's got the freshman record tied. One more at 19, and he'll be in. At 18, he's already in like the on-page media guide leaderboard for home runs in a single season for Tech. But if he gets to 2, he'll be in the top 15, and he'll be only the 16th Jacket to hit 20 homers in a season, which feels absolutely doable. But we're in that part of the schedule we've been mentioning that's going to be treacherous, to put it lightly. We had to win these games. We had to win the series, and we did, I think, is the critical thing here. They did not. It would have been very Tech to win the 3 series, and then including the Virginia one and North Carolina State, and then just drop everything and somehow lose 2 or 3 in the series. And they did not. They were really close to sweeping it. Like, as we mentioned, like, they had a late lead and just barely couldn't pull that one off. But when they needed to win the series, good Lord, did they just not let Miami even have a chance. Which that's what I like about it, is they have a step on your throat energy to them, which is very nice to see.
I gave up on doing exact math, but ballpark of 55 runs plus 55 of the last 3 full weeks, midweeks, and weekends combined. Not 55 runs scored across those 12 games, but plus 55. About 120, 130 in the Tech ledger there, and really just that the Virginia game where they gave up 12, and that was in a winning effort, and the Auburn game where they gave up 12, and the Virginia Tech game where they gave up 11. So you take those out, and that's a bigger differential. But then you're really starting to play with the numbers there. But I don't know. I think it's quite interesting to see how this team has. I guess, it's fair to say they've rallied in that regard to put themselves in a position where we're talking about them. They've got momentum, and heck, man, Clemson's a top 5 team, top 3, top 2 team in the country, depending on who you ask and what numbers they're looking at. Like
Any given
this,
day, yeah.
and they're going on the road there this weekend. So it if they don't know soon, they're about to really have a reckoning coming up here.
I'm looking at some other numbers on the just general stats page here. If they hit 2 homers in a game, they've won 16 of 18. So, which is emblematic of good days at the plate. If they score at least 6 runs, they are 26-4. So it's kind of the barometer there. Is once they if they score 5 or less, they're 1-11. So basically, the barometer is, did they score 6 runs in a game? Pitching wise, I mean, you can go kind of either way. It's less consistent there. I mean, obviously, if we allow a bunch of runs, we're usually going to lose. We've only won one game where we've allowed 10 plus runs, and that was that crazy 17-13 game. But for the most part, that seems to be the point of demarcation here, is get to 6 runs one way or another. And they certainly can, because they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They got 7 guys hitting 300 or better right now. Very same, which is kind of the same thing the softball's been doing. Just like everyone up and down the order gets a lot of hits. Trey Unger's hitting 381. Drew Burris is hitting 368. Parker Brocious is right at 300, and Carson Kearse is at 290, right behind him. He's gotten better throughout the season. So
Yeah,
like
that's
we
been a
have,
great one to watch right there too. I want to just emphasize.
absolutely. So we've got a set of guys now. These are the dudes. It's Trey, it's Drew, it's Cam Jones, Payden Green, Matthew Ellis, who has been very nice at the plate recently, Mike Bisciotti, Brocious Kersey, Bobby Zmarzlak, and John Gieseler. Like, that's the lineup. Those are the guys now. We solidified on a group. Von Lackey has had some appearances. Ryan Jarrows has had some appearances, but those are the 9. If you can get those 9 and any Affinitary or Jones throwing, that's gonna look good. That's gonna give us a shot to beat just about anybody.
Really going to be if they do get in, to the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament potentially after that. I think I still got a lot of questions about pitching and how that translates in a regional or pool play slash quick tournament type setting. But hey, if they can bring the runs and the bats up to Clemson, they really do stand a chance this weekend. But keeping them off the board,
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
those
the
are the two
question.
things you do: pitch and hit, and they really have to be locked in on both and
It does seem
against this
like
team in particular. So.
we've done it enough times now to where it does seem like we can just hit our way into one win or series, though. Like, I
Yeah.
wouldn't be surprised if we just put 12 up in one of these games against Clemson and maybe only score two or three in the other games, but that 12-run game, we win like 12-9 or something like that. Like, that seems reasonable given the last four series, which that's a month of baseball. That's a pretty good sample size.
Yeah. Tech needs a win in each one of these series and hopefully to win a series or two out of these last
Man,
three.
if they even one series will go a long way just in terms of boosting that whole resume. Because I think we mentioned last week, Jake, like the RPI, we only have favorable RPI matchups left. We got
Yes.
past all the ones that are going to sink us. We got thankfully got two against Miami, but winning
Well,
2 of 6, 2 of 7 against these crazy good teams, because we had an Auburn game smashed in the middle of all this, was going to be something.
well, and one more point on the Miami bit. Really would have been nice to have three there. I think that puts Tech not necessarily in a catbird seat, obviously still on the bubble, but to be two games up in the conference, you want to be finishing 500 in conference or better, I think. But that carts and horses and whatnot. So.
Good stuff. Let's switch over to softball, which was also playing Kennesaw State this past week in the midweek, and then faced off versus UVA. A walk-off win in game one, and then two straight losses at home, a 16-1 game that we won't spend a ton of time on, and then a 4-3 close loss there. Jack, you were on site for a bunch of these games. What did you see? What have you heard? Give me the deets here.
I think my general takeaways here is that, one, similar to baseball, they can sometimes just out-hit a team and get a win there. You can get a win. Virginia, I think, Jake, we mentioned last week, like pretty close to us just in terms of where they sat in the ACC, just overall comps, just like they were not far different from us. The Friday game played that way. It took a Jaden Gailey double, walk-off double to get it done. We nearly got a walk-off in the third game. We lost 4-3. Like they had. This team will hit late in a game. They've got the cardiac jacket energy in them, to at least remain competitive when it's close. Yeah, that 16-1 game. So games get terrible. Games get out of hand quickly sometimes, and just that was that. So not much to really talk about there. But yeah, I think the clutch hitting's big for me because Reese Hunter had one of the walk offs, and she's done that multiple times this year. So, and she did that last year as well against Auburn, even when she was not on a super super great hitting stretch. Like she still can get you a seventh inning at bat that matters. Which is a nice little gene to have. Right now, we have a 411 on base percentage as a team, which is tied for the highest in school history with the 2010 team, but that does include their playoff postseason games. So there is a shot. This is the best team to get reach base ever, in Tech history, pending how these next games unfold. I think my other big point is that Kinsey Norton is on a very slowly but surely good increase in value right now because. Generally, she's a ground ball pitcher, but she's now had 2 7 strikeout games. So she's figuring out her stuff better, I guess, is what that translates to be, is that not as much contact, more swing and misses, which is really good to see. Because it's probably going to end up be if I had my guess, it's going to be Sophia's going to start her ACC tournament game, and then probably Kinsey will come in behind her because they've done that pairing a lot in the pitch by committee general idea they have. We'll see if they get. We'll see what the plan. I don't know what the plan would be if they win that game. If they decide to go to Nelliman or Dennis, they've kind of they don't go to them as frequently, but they're still in the rotation. So yeah, I think that's we're in an interesting spot. We got like a week and a half before we play another game, though. So everyone's gonna be fresh. That much we know.
It's such a weird, because some teams will have another series this weekend, right? It's such like a
Yeah,
weird break
and those teams that
and
do have yeah.
unevenness.
Yeah, I checked the schedule. It's only like Pitt and I think Syracuse that play each other, and then like Florida State plays like Robert, like some, I think Virginia Tech plays Robert. There's some teams just play non-con games this weekend too.
Some of
Yeah,
them
so
just want to
yeah,
stay fresh. So
which is fair.
it's the
Yeah, it's
whole
fair.
like
Yeah.
The whole Braves postseason, do we play scrimmages for a week to try to stay fresh
Well,
instead of breaking
right.
our rhythm thing? And that worked out great for them, but not that that has any bearing on this,
No,
but
no.
I digress.
I mean, some schools don't have that choice to, like, if you're two
True,
northern
true.
schools such as, Louisville and Boston College, to pick a random example, like the ACC
Fairly random.
sending you to, finish that series up because, it's May and you got to play in the sunny places early. So, it's not, I don't want to say luck of the draw type deal, but it's different for everyone. And I think probably wrapping up with an open weekend, hey, maybe that's a good thing. Like, that freshness is, it can work both ways. So we'll see.
Also,
I don't
it's
know that we
finals
had this
week.
opportunity last year. So
It is finals week. That is a critical point.
It is also finals week, which I just remembered. So
There
that
is
is
a
probably most of the reason for this break,
there is absolutely
as these
nothing
are
happening in front of Britain in 2 hours, as far as I know.
2 hours as we record this now, which will be completely meaningless to anyone listening to this tomorrow morning.
I will
But I digress.
last note I'll have, and just in conference games specifically, Sarah Beth Allen had a 500 on base percentage. She's approaching top five in walks in school history, like in a single season. There, Jin Soleo had 88 in her crazy 2010 season, so that record's untouchable. That's never getting touched. But she got three in a game on Friday, and I think she's in the 50s now, which is really good. That puts you in some high stature in Tech history. Jin Soleo's been hitting 383 mainly out of the nine hole, which I know there's some strategy there because she's fast to have her in the nine spot. But I wonder if they think about just like getting the people that are getting on base, and she's got a 409 on base percentage. So I wonder if they think about in a playoff context, like we're going to have an ACC tournament, truly stacking the entire top of the lineup with the on base people, maybe shifting some of the power down. I don't know. That's just a thought in my head because I know that's a strategy, but it's worked down there, and she has doubled her career home run total in her final season. So if there is a most improved on this team, I pretty squarely am going to say Jin Soleo at this point.
I think I have two things on that. Number one, I think Mallory Black and Sophia Boyles have a shout for that.
Good point.
Mallory
Good point.
Black,
Good point.
especially
Well,
because
yeah, Val's doing
her
everything. Yep.
hitting, right, her hitting in ACC series, to be fair, is only 257, but she is knocking in the home runs
She still
on
hits it
the
out.
season. Yeah. So her turn into a more of a power hitter has been really fun to watch this season. And then so on Sophia Boyles, I was actually gonna bring this up as a sub point. But she has a 3.6 ERA. She is the closest pitcher to the Mendoza line in terms of opposing batting average at 211. So like and this is all ACC stats just for comparison for in sake for the tournament. But like she's been solid this season. I think there's definitely a growth pattern between how erratic she could be at times in the past couple of years, but clearly there's been a lot of she's put in a lot of work, and it's a credit to the coaching staff too to help her develop and really grow into a role as more of a primary starter this year. So I think that's been really good to see as well.
I think it's the numbers haven't panned out how we've hoped for the entire pitching staff. So seeing Sophia just be that rock that we can go to and start two games a series at this point, like she did against Virginia, is that's huge. Like that's given this team a lot of like the hitting's there, but that I remember the thing that sticks to me the most that Eileen said when I interviewed her for the first time a couple years ago was like, if you got to be good in the circle, or else you kind of that's the biggest determining factor. And so she's her being this version of Sophia Boyles this season, and Kenzie Norton for that matter, has given this team so much extra life that I don't think any of us necessarily saw coming necessarily. We knew marginal improvements were possible, of course, but that put them in a different spot than what we expected.
Also, just got a lot more opportunity this year, I think, than in the past. So,
Yeah, that is very true. Let's talk a little bit about what's at stake at the ACC tournament. Tech, as I think we mentioned before, is the six seed. UVA was actually the five. So if they had wanted to, Tech had wanted to advance one spot to not play on day two and instead start on day one with the bye, they would have had to sweep
oh no, this is
UVA.
day two. We're day two. We're day two.
That, okay. Well, fun fact then. But six seed in the ACC tournament. As noted in our notes here, is the highest placement that Tech has had since 2013. Again, they'll face the 3BT on Thursday at 7:30. What is at stake, Mr. Grant, as we take a look at some of our rankings here? Where does Tech fit in to the NCAA tournament picture as we head into this sort of final weekend of the season before the tournament?
Yeah, I think we were all somewhat high on the ACC to start the year. I will say that I guess the prognostication of late, whether that's RPI, our numbers, et cetera, if you take a look at RPI and adjusted RPI, that has Tech firmly right around like that 60 number, that's going to put you on the outside looking in. It just is. I think interestingly, it's with a better record in conference and otherwise than teams are looking up at, but that's how the math works, and the committee does lean on the RPI. Louisville sitting at 45, NC State at 56, both of those soft bubble, probably looking out based on how the baseball and softball bubbles usually shake up, and that is affected by certain conferences getting a lot of teams in, ACC and SEC in baseball, and SEC and Big 12 and Pac-12 in softball. But I think at least this podcast was pretty high on the ACC to start the year. But right now, I mean, it's Virginia, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Florida State, and Duke probably leading the way. And barring a little run here in the tournament, I think it probably winds up solidifying at or near that, and get some opportunities for some good wins. I mean, they're all going to be there. So if you can play and get, maybe two or three wins there, then well, one, you've probably won it all if you're getting three. But if you're starting playing on day two, but I don't know, it's a little tough. I kind of had the ACC penciled in to be a little bit stronger in my notes at the beginning of the year, but that's life. You got to play the games and you got to win the games if you're beating up on each other or just not getting some of those out of conference ways to notch a good win, then that's going to kind of drive the boat there. And I do think, picking up the series against Virginia maybe puts Tech in the mix there again or sweep. But yeah, I think they've got the work cut out for them this coming week. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, we got one game. It's all single. It's all single elimination. There's no double elim crazy stuff. It's just you win or go home. So we are in that point of we're nowhere close to an auto bid anymore. So it's win the tournament, or that's probably going to be it next week. So I mean, what Virginia Tech did they? I was checking the pitching lines when we faced them last. We got swept as we thought we would, and they got to us early every game before we ever really had a shot to get our bats cooking. So if we're gonna do this, it's gonna take, I mean, honestly, it legitimately might take Sarah Beth Allen and Madison and but yeah, sure, Dobbins too, and Mallory Black all hitting homers in the first inning. Like, I think they might need to hit three or four in the first two innings just to put the pressure on. And
Bat
bat
around a
around
couple times.
and keep in mind we're going to see the schedule change next year, but Tech hasn't seen Duke, Florida State, and Clemson in a like those teams are tough, but also if you don't get the opportunity to notch some quality wins there, then that can be part of variance too, not sneaking up and grabbing a game against Clemson or against Florida State. I mean, we've seen other teams in the conference kind of buoy themselves with that, whether you're an NC State or a Louisville or a North Carolina. So just food for thought, I think. But I think this team, especially with how they can hit, has the ability to win three, four games in May. It's just going to be a matter of keeping the runs off the board going the other way and doing it multiple times. And I think the multiples is the key there. So.
Two things before I head out. Number one, it's very fun how narratives for both of softball and baseball work themselves out and are so uniform. It makes our jobs a lot easier. Number two, the ACC baseball tournament has pool play, so that proto group stage, and the softball tournament is a straight knockout. I'm gonna ambush you both with this question, and you have to pick one. Which one is better? Jack, you're first.
Baseball.
Jake?
I think softball is the right tournament for softball in the regards that you don't want some of your teams to have to take two losses. If you're, worried about the bubble and in a league where there's, I guess more at stake. You're only putting 4 to 7 teams in the tournament versus the ACC, and baseball's going 9 to 12. I think the baseball pool play is also silly in my opinion. The
Oh,
just, one
it's
and one and
incredibly
one and
dumb.
one and one
Yeah,
all
that's
breaking a
so
tie
weird.
to the high seed. Like, why is the high seed the tiebreaker? I've got so many questions.
The high
But I think
seed
softball's the
tiebreaker is
right.
one of the dumbest things, by the way,
It
because it
makes
makes
for
a third game meaningless in a lot of
yes.
cases.
You, I was going to say my answer depends on two things. One, you should never play a game that is fully meaningless. It the ACC pool play, why? Like, why does that exist? And two, the softball tournament is the right tournament for that league, just with how the competitive field is. It's just different, right? I mean,
But
that's
then also,
you
like,
don't.
they're carrying so many fewer pitchers too. It's not like you have 13 guys you can just go use in a
But
game in 3 weeks.
I mean for like RPI and win loss type deal. You do
Yeah,
not
yeah,
want
yeah.
those bubble teams to go 0-2 or 1-2, because
Right,
then
right.
boom, like, oh,
They're out. Yeah,
congrats,
then they're
you've
out.
just
Yeah.
popped the bubble for three
Right,
teams when you didn't need to.
Yeah, at least our VT, in the case we lose to VT, well, not that we're competitive in the tournament, but if we were like, I don't know, sitting 56th and then playing VT here, it's like, okay, it doesn't hurt as bad than if you
There's
finish
cushion.
VT and then you face Florida
But
State right after. Like, it just, yeah, I get your point there.
or a hey, like, we took an L, we got a win against Boston College or whoever, Syracuse or whoever, and then oh nope, then we got waxed by Florida State or something. Like that's a worst case scenario. And I think, oh gosh, we don't have time for this podcast, but I'm just gonna put it out there. I'm pretty sure that's why the volleyball tournament went away, but we can talk about that another time.
That raises a good point, but we will talk about that another day. Gentlemen, we'll be back after this short break.
Yes, as always, this podcast is brought to you by Section 103. I want to bring up something that I may never have before. I can't remember, but it's been a while, and I feel like I've really been getting a lot of work out of the Drew Burris and baseball content lately. So I instead am going to plug the all ages inclusivity of Section 103. That's everything from onesies for toddlers all the way up to fully grown men like the three of us here on this fine podcast. There really is something for everyone, whether that is a sweater, a long sleeve shirt, a short sleeve shirt, sizing, or the diverse array of ages there. I encourage you to check those out. I own a Section 103 in quite a number of different cuts, and I will say there's one for every season. Check them out, section103.com and at section103 on Twitter.
Welcome back to Scions of the Southland for April 29th. Let's talk about men's basketball and football very quickly. A smattering of portal entries and draft stuff, and just a lot of roster management stuff to go over. Jack, do you want to walk us through all of these updates?
I will. Yes. The two main things here that impact to active Tech teams in 2024, 2025 is Zachary Toby, a cornerback from Illinois, coming in. I know secondary is a thing we need some help with, and that is a guy that, in theory, will be able to help on the cornerback side. And then we mentioned this on the podcast last week, but Luke O'Brien transferred over from Colorado to join Damon Stoudamire's men's basketball team. He is going to be a big old 3-point specialist, which I think is going to be really helpful, especially in the case that Miles Kelly does end up getting drafted or goes in the portal, which he announced he's going to the portal again, or at least he's going to try it out and see what happens. But I do want to mention our basketball writer, Drew Gordon, did write an article about Luke. So if you want a good scouting report, that is where to go for that. But yeah, so I wonder how much, if there's a shot Miles comes back, how that parlays with Luke, because that'll be interesting. In other news, Kerry Gee, who's in our safety group, he entered the portal, so he's probably not going to be coming back. NFL news: Paul Mawala, he came back. He got a camp invite to the Bears. Tech was one of 12 Power 5 teams to not get a draft pick, sadly, or not have anyone drafted. But we are a young team, so also is partly due to why. Both of our tight ends got at least camp deals. Luke Benson's going to go to the San Diego, not Los Angeles Chargers. Dylan Leonard to the Denver Broncos, and then on the defensive side, Andre White got a camp invite to with the New York Giants, and Jalen King got one as well to the New York Jets. So we got guys all over the place doing stuff, which is good to see. And then lastly on basketball, Ibrahima Sako went to the portal as well. And see, with the class coming in and some of these, it did not seem like he was going to get much playing time. He only had so much playing time this year anyways, and a very young team, which I think is telling if he couldn't get playing time as a freshman on this team that was playing high school seniors and freshmen, that probably was going to be a foreshadowing of your future with Tech. So sad to see him go, but hopefully good luck to him. Good luck to oh, who else? Oh yeah, Miles Kelly. Hopefully they work out wherever they land. But yeah, a lot of stuff. I think the transfer portal is closing pretty soon as well on the football and basketball front. So this will have a slowdown very soon. But that was all just in the last week.
At some point, I will sit down and learn when the transfer windows are for college athletics, but
It
today
seems
is
like they're
not that
also
day.
changing. Like, there's always like 10 ideas of when it should and shouldn't be
Don't
open.
you
So,
love it when the NCAA builds the plane as they're flying it? It's my favorite
absolutely,
part of
it's
college
so
athletics.
fun. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Speaking of the NCAA, let's talk about the tennis tournaments. The men are up first in our shot sheet here. They will face off against Middle Tennessee State, who won the CUSA this year. And then the winner of that will face number 16, Miss State, or Alabama State with a win. Is that, I don't have the full bracket in front of me, but I think one of you put this in here. Is this like a, how do you say, a like, 68 team play-in, they're starting in Dayton first four situation, or is
We are
this
not.
a normal bracket here?
This is normal bracket for normal sports. Nothing to worry about here. I'll just the fun
No,
note
no
here.
four extra TV games.
No,
Bah.
no, no, no. TNT's not
Hey,
getting
that
extra.
supports the local economy in Dayton, Ohio. I
True
will not have
TV.
you slander
True
True
TV is not
TV
getting
barrel
anything here.
NCAA.
I'll just note, Tech is in the exact same spot in this men's bracket as the volleyball team was in their bracket, which is based the number 17 slot, which means if they win two games, they face the number one seed, which in this case is Ohio State. So screwed over again.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, I
It
mean,
is what it is.
they were all going to be tough. These top 16 seeds in tennis are
well, critically,
they're
that means
pretty
we were.
spooky.
We were one spot away from hosting, is what that means, though.
And I
Which
think that's above really any metric that we saw, unless there's some sort of draft regional, like send the nearby teams to nearby place type concept to
well,
it
that might
too.
be the that could be the case here because we've got, I mean, the furthest we've got Ohio State, Cleveland State playing against each other. Cleveland State, I'm guessing, is an auto bid.
Yes, the Horizons auto bid.
But you got Vandy, Oklahoma State, Middle Tennessee, Alabama State, Mississippi State here. So it's all modern day SEC territory, basically, or postmodern. I don't know what you want to call it. And then, so yeah, it does look like they're generally trying for that. I do see Auburn's playing Pepperdine, and they got to go to Arizona. So yeah, so it works in some cases. Oh my goodness! Oh, there is an all ACC matchup. Featuring zero ACC teams in it on the right side of the bracket, as SMU and Stanford are playing each other in the first
On
round.
this, by the way, I actually
Okay.
want to play off of this. I saw I think it was a Twitter, it was like an Instagram video of the ACC logo down at Naples Pavilion, Stanford's basketball court.
It's so
It's
bad.
still so funny that
Oh
this
my
is a
God.
reality in the modern day of college athletics, that a team that has some sort of nearby water feature that is not decidedly not the Atlantic Ocean, by the way,
Yes.
is in fact the opposite, almost the polar opposite of the Atlantic Ocean, is in the Atlantic Coast
You are
Conference. It's
allowed to have
crazy.
a you are allowed to have an eastern side Great Lake or the Atlantic Ocean near you, not the Pacific Ocean, but yeah. Sure enough, SMU and Stanford playing each other in the tournaments. Last time, in theory, this will be possible until the great actual realignment happens when everyone gets fed up.
Well, I mean, technically, could be anytime soon, depending on lawsuits, but we'll see. We continue to trudge on. Let's talk about the women's team very quickly. Also, team tournament entrants. They will face off against Illinois in the first round, and then they will face the winner of Texas, the 9 seed, the 9 national seed, or Harvard with a win. I've always referred to Harvard as the Texas of Boston, so that's a fun little matchup there. This is women's tennis's 24th straight tournament appearance. So that's very, very neat. Gentlemen, any notes on this matchup with Illinois?
I mean, not particularly. It's a solid first round opponent. There, we've seen Illinois in many seasons in the past. I think it's one of those winnable, not coin flippy, but it's a 2-3 seed type matchup for sure.
I can confirm there are no future ACC versus future ACC matchups in the first round of this one.
Well, I will say they do seed to avoid that, and that's only going to get harder as the SEC and
Yeah,
ACC get larger and larger, and Big Ten as well.
I'll be curious if they do some rule changes there. Yeah, I guess. Well, here's my one thing, Jake, is I think earlier that if we talked about this preseason, we probably would have thought the women would have had a higher seed now than the men would have in their respective tournaments. The women are on the are like in that like 20 to like in that 20 to 22 seed range if you were to keep adding the numbers to the system on the bracket. So it's I think that's just a fun little. They're hovering in the same general range. The men were technically closer by what the bracket looks like to hosting. But I think it's just a nice little surprise.
I do want to say that I don't think the I don't want to be like, oh, well, the men are further out. Like
They're not.
if you look at the I was going to say if you look at the like the ratings, I think it's a geography play as well. Just
That's probably true.
I do think it is because the women, it's they're very comparable teams. Honestly, they've had very pretty comparable seasons in general. Very convenient of them, honestly. But yeah, it's almost unanimous across the board, and not that there's a ton of tennis rankings, but the men's, they kind of consistently slot in like the 25 to 30-ish range, whereas the women are just a hair higher than them in the like 20 to 26 range, if that makes like I get it. I think if you read the numbers, it makes sense, but I think it's like a for all intents and purposes, they're in a very similar spot. They have winnable first round games. They're going to be in tough spots in the second, but hey, they're both getting Director's Cup points this year. That's good, at
That's
least.
nice. That's nice. We're
That's
guaranteed
all
at
that
least
matters.
three sports, four sports of Director's Cup.
Yeah,
We will
golf, two
finally be able to
tennises, and
compete.
football.
Volleyball and football.
Yeah,
Finally
five.
competing
competing with ACC rival Stanford in the Director's Cup. I'm
Yeah,
so
there we go.
happy.
Let's go.
Yeah,
It's
there we go.
so great. Just for rankings purposes, I do have the ITAs pulled up. Georgia Tech is 24th on the women's side, and Illinois is 38th. So pretty close in the grand scheme of things, that one. I didn't look up Middle Tennessee State because I didn't time, but we will move on. We will persist. Let's talk a little bit about track and field. They were at Penn Relays. Jake, what do you have for me on day one?
I will say there was one finish that stood out certainly above the rest. That was Helena Lindsay's third place in the steeplechase. The steeplechase is fun. If you guys have not watched track, they really do it all. There's some splashing, some jumping, some running. It's an interesting event. So congrats to her third with just a hair above 10. And Grace Driscoll also got seventh in the steeplechase. Mary Brady fifth in the 5,000 meter, the 5K with a 15:55:20. That's a pretty good spot to be in. It's awesome to see single digit numbers in the results for the most prestigious track meet in America, or at least one of the most historic amateur events that is still run in the States. But there's a bunch of different divisions, so I'm sure there's sponsored division and high school division and college division and things like that. So I honestly am not sure how that stacks up against some of the pro-am type stuff, but anyways, they're certainly up against quite a number of competitors. So, Third place, not a bad spot to be. I think that's the upshot.
Good stuff. Talking about day two, Tech actually won the 4x800 relay. Parker Buchheit, Alex Thomas, Jeremiah DeLuca, and Nick Nyman placed first with a time of 7:28.67. On the women's side, Kayla Rose, Riley Perlikowski, Hallie Walker, and Reagan Mahoney placed fifth, 8:58.09. And then the final event on day two that we wanted to point out, Tech had a Mary Brady, Lottie Chapel, Gracie Marston, and Kate Shortberg all place in the 4x1500 relay with a time of 17:59.64. Mr. Grant, what do you have on the LSU invite that Tech was also at in a split squad action,
Yeah,
double bear?
pretty quick to go around the horn here. I will say it looked like the Penn relay skewed distance. LSU, I saw long jump from Mia Wilson, got third place with a 6.56. That was the only field event of the entire weekend that really stood out. But we also had a nice second place in the 4x4 relay for Jameson Miller, Sydney McReynolds, Caden Terrell, and Winston DeCuir the third, second place, 3:10.96. So not bad. Not bad at all there. The school record was exciting up in Philly. The first place was exciting up in Philly, getting a couple podium finishes in LSU was good. I'm interested to see how it affects the track and field and cross country big rankings thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to me because there's so much variance in it, numbers, but you know, that's what the ACC championships are for. Finally getting all the gang in one spot. So
Finally, getting all the gang in one spot in Atlanta for the first time in a while. That'll be May 9th through the 11th at Griffin Track here in Atlanta. And then, short while after that, it'll be NCAA's time. My last note on track and field, they should sell the Tech should sell the gold, the all gold, like warm up sweaters that the team that won the 4x800 was wearing. I think that would be pretty sweet. I'm always down for more Adidas branded merch. Mr. Grant, I'm coming back to you again. Talk to me about club lacrosse.
Yeah, we've got a very spooky matchup in the first round because the MC I almost said MCAA MCLA bracket is out. Georgia Tech is seeded sixth as the SCLC champion. They face Cal. Those of you who are regular listeners might recognize that. Georgia Tech visited Cal this year. This is a rematch of a previous Georgia Tech loss. So if you're looking for narrative, gents, there's a lot of narrative coming into this. Georgia Tech, I believe, finished the season with just three losses, two of which came on a brutal trip out west to play Cal and Texas. I know we've heard some rumblings that there were some injuries and things like that that hindered Tech. So should make for an exciting opener in Round Rock. That'll be May 6, 2024 at 12:30 p.m. So if you are so inclined, definitely check it out on streaming. But I mean, I couldn't ask for a more interesting opener considering we've seen these guys already. Kind of
Yeah,
spooky,
that's cool.
but
Yeah, that'll be cool. We got lots of postseason action campus wide in Texas too. Like, and Round Rock's not a far cry from Austin as well. So, the gravitational center of Tech will be somewhere in what, Mississippi, if you take the Texas and Clemson for where we have games coming up, in North Carolina.
I'm just glad that Tech gets to face off against another ACC rival
Oh my
in yet
God.
another sport.
So huge. Absolutely necessary.
I'm gonna keep bringing it up. I'm gonna make fun of it every time. I'm
I think
not
that's the way
really
to go.
gonna. I'm not gonna let up on this
There's
because
no
it's
reason this
so
bit. There's
ridiculous.
no reason this bit can't last for like 3 or 4 years if it has to. Like,
I mean, technically,
it,
it only lasts until July because that's when it goes into goes
then it's
into
real. Then it's
effect.
real.
Yeah, and then
Jeez.
it gets less funny. But you know, we don't think about our jokes that hard. Well, I try not to. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me tonight. I think that about wraps it up for us. Where can the people find us, Mr. Grant?
The people can find us as always at fromtherumbleseat.com. You can find us on Twitter at FTRS blog. You can email us at fromtherumbleseat@gmail.com. We do appreciate your feedback and comments there. Again, summer's coming up, so if there's something you want us let's do a deep dive in. We are still taking info. I know I say that a lot, but I always like putting it out there. If you've got a moment, rate, review on all your favorite podcast apps. We're there. And the things that you guys do to give us 5 stars or give us that feedback, that is how people find this podcast, and this tent grows a little bit bigger. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube as well at From the Rumble Seat. You can find Section 103 at section103.com. And until we speak again, good night, good luck, and go Jackets.